is one of the nicest days we've had in quite some time, wouldn't you guys say?
I didn't realize the sun actually existed until I saw proof in the sky today that it does. Not only is the mountain out, but the mountains are out.
Yeah, several mountains, in fact. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. With me is Eileen. Hello, Eileen.
Hello.
And Becky, hey.
How you doing?
I'm actually doing very well, and I am Sam. Sam I am, etc. Back in the saddle, as they say, after a pretty harrowing week last week, as you might imagine. But I don't know if you've been following the blog, but I've been a little bit under the weather. But today I'm feeling pretty good and ready to do a show. How about
We're happy
you guys?
To have you back.
Yay!
Welcome back, Sam.
So, I'm back in the saddle, and we've got a segment well popular among listeners of Ask an Atheist, and that would be Scripture Says What? And today, we have the King James Bible, Cambridge edition, and this is Numbers 22:28. And the Lord opened the mouth of the ass, and she said unto Balaam, What have I done unto thee, that thou hast smitten me these three times?
This was submitted to us by our very own Darren.
Hi, Darren.
Who works with Ask an Atheist.
Yeah.
I think that, well, this is just further evidence that the Bible says silly things. Can donkeys talk?
Oh, so it's the donkey that's talking. I thought it was God that was talking, and that in this quote, God was a lady.
Oh, and she said to... No, it's a lowercase s for the she. So no, I think the she
well,
refers
it is,
to...
Well, it is the Bible, and so if it's the she God, then it's not as important as the he God, therefore lowercase.
Yeah.
I can make a case. Hey, see?
Perhaps. I think, you know, well, if we say, okay, clearly donkeys don't talk, and clearly, you know, if donkeys don't talk, then how could the Lord actually make a donkey talk? You know, maybe this is for people who don't actually take the Bible literally. Maybe this is all a metaphor, right?
Yeah.
So the Lord opened the mouth of the
Or maybe
ass.
They just had some really good stuff that week.
I don't know. Eileen, any thoughts on this one?
Well, I was going to insert a fart joke, but I didn't think it was appropriate.
Alright, well, we'll do this one. It's a quick one, but just to show you that we're still doing, Scripture Says What? If you have a religious text or tome or a quote thereof that you would like to share with us, you can go to our website at askanatheist.tv or email us at questions@askanatheist.tv and let us know. And we'll put it on the air, and as usual, non-biblical quotes do get priority because it's just stuff that we're not as familiar with here in the U.S. So, that's kind of a right to you guys.
Sounds awesome.
Right.
All right. So let's get right to our interview today. David Niosi is an attorney, activist, and president of the Washington-based American Humanist Association. He also serves as vice president of the Secular Coalition for America and has served on the boards of Greater Worcester. Okay, that's right. Humanists and Greater Boston Humanists.
I am from those parts. I can say
those.
Greater Worcester Humanists.
Yeah, well, all those East Coast barbarian places. Yes. His book, Non-Believer Nation, is scheduled for release in July of this year. David, how you doing today?
Hi, how are you?
Doing pretty good.
Thanks for being on the show today. So,
hey,
David,
thanks for having me.
I have a question for you. So, can you describe, you have obviously many titles, what is your role in all of these organizations? What's a typical week like for you?
Well, believe it or not, one role that wasn't mentioned is that my real job is as a full-time attorney. I have a law practice here in suburban Boston. So a typical week for me is working in my law office, but spending an awful lot of time doing things relating to the American Humanist Association and the Secular Coalition for America, various types of activism. These groups are up to all sorts of things all the time, whether it's advertising or lobbying or just rallying the troops about certain issues. We've got the National Day of Reason coming up in a couple weeks, and so that's kind of the big thing on the horizon. But lots of things going on all the time.
Now, the National Day of Reason, that's in protest or in contrast to is that the National Day of Prayer?
That's right, right. The first Thursday of May every year is the National Day of Prayer. Now, that in itself would not be such a big deal. We wouldn't even oppose it if all the churches in the country just got together and decided that they wanted to have something that they call the National Day of Prayer. But that's not what the National Day of Prayer is, as you probably know. It's a government-sponsored exaltation.
Hello?
Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. And since it's government-sponsored, we think that's wrong. We think, you know, the government not be sponsoring prayer or promoting prayer or encouraging it. And that's why we oppose it with the National Day of Reason. We think reason is something that all Americans should be able to agree on as a universal value that's worth exalting.
What type of activities do you have planned for the National Day of Reason?
Well, there's a lot of things going on with local chapters. AHA chapters celebrate, if you will, the National Day of Reason in different ways. Some of them, as opposed to prayer, which is basically trying to speak to a supernatural entity to get things done, a lot of humanists and atheists like to do something that is truly practical, like maybe have a blood drive or volunteer at a food bank, that sort of thing. It contrasts very nicely, doesn't it, the difference between prayer and true doing good.
Yeah, actual work in the community.
Exactly.
So it looks like amongst those kinds of activities, there's also this this lawsuit that's being brought in Massachusetts by the AHA against the inclusion of Under God in the Pledge of Allegiance being recited in public schools.
That's right.
And while most cases seem to focus on the Establishment Clause, you know, separating church and state, how is this case different?
Well, it's much different, actually. It's taking a wholly new approach to this issue of governmental religiosity. And we're actually asking the court to not even think about the Establishment Clause. Just about any church-state case that you've ever heard of has almost certainly been an Establishment Clause case, whether you're talking about getting prayer or Bible reading knocked out of public schools in the 60s or Ten Commandment cases, things like that. They're almost always Establishment Clause cases. But what we're doing is we're telling the court, please don't even think about the Establishment Clause here, but instead look at this issue from the angle of equal protection, equal rights, that it's wrong to discriminate against atheist and humanist families by having them go to school each day to have the government, the school, sponsor a patriotic exercise that really, in many ways, defines patriotism on a daily basis with religious terminology, according to religious belief. Obviously, if you look at the Pledge of Allegiance, it literally states that we are a nation under God. So implicitly in that is that you know, true patriots, true Americans are believers. And if you don't believe that, then you don't quite measure up as a good American. So it's a discrimination-based case instead of Establishment Clause case, and we're very optimistic about it. It's an exciting new way of pursuing the rights of atheist humanists.
So do you think that, do you get the sense that that there's some really good momentum within Massachusetts? This is under, you know, a federal, you know, anti-discrimination clause, is under the federal protection, equal protection clause, or is this particular to the Massachusetts state constitution?
It's under the Massachusetts state constitution. Massachusetts has an equal rights amendment as part of its constitution. It was passed back in 1976. And interestingly enough, it forbids discrimination based on several different criteria, race, sex, and whatnot. But one of the expressly forbidden criteria is discrimination based on religion. So here we have a constitutional provision that expressly forbids discrimination based on religion. And unlike the federal constitution, with the equal protection language of the federal constitution is in the 14th Amendment, which was passed in the 1860s after the Civil War, and it does not expressly forbid discrimination based on religion. There is some dicta out there, and it's pretty much understood that it's supposed to forbid discrimination based on religion, but it's never really been litigated very far because everyone gravitates to the First Amendment when they're litigating in federal court on religious questions. We might try a federal case under the 14th Amendment at some point, but the Massachusetts Equal Rights Amendment actually provides protection that is stronger than federal protection on religious discrimination. mention. It's expressly forbidden, and it's the Massachusetts courts take equality very seriously. I'll remind you, Massachusetts state courts under the state constitution is where the Goodridge same-sex marriage case came down back in 2003, declaring as a matter of equal protection under the state constitution that gays and lesbians have the right to marry, and that was the first case anywhere in the country where that was found. And we see what a game changer that was, didn't we? After the Goodridge case came down, all of a sudden, gay marriage, same-sex marriage became a serious issue all across the country, and it's become legal in many other jurisdictions now, too.
Including Washington State just recently.
Right.
And I understand this might be blue-skying here, but given that Massachusetts has hewed to a much closer standard of non-discrimination, do you think that this sort of test would translate well to other states?
Well, we think it would, because Massachusetts is not the only state that has an Equal Rights Amendment, and it's not the only state that would frown upon religious discrimination. As I said, I really think if we brought a federal case at some point, maybe not on this precise issue, but there's a lot of respect for the notion of equality, and that's one reason why we wanted to pursue atheist humanist rights through an equality avenue. If you think about the Establishment Clause, it's a wonderful piece of the Constitution. Obviously, we all love the First Amendment, but the Establishment Clause is not an identity-oriented means of asserting your rights, and I can illustrate that but with a simple example. Even a Christian could bring an Establishment Clause case objecting to a Christian cross on a public park. Because the question is whether the government violated a rule that it set for itself about commingling with religion. We even saw that Christian objecting to a cross example with the Salazar versus Buono Mojave Desert case. The plaintiff objecting to the cross was a Christian.
Right.
So that there's really no identity component to it. There's really nothing that really makes an issue of whether a religious minority is being wrongly treated, being discriminated against by the majority. And we really think it's important that the atheist humanists pursue those rights. After all, just about every other minority in the country, when they assert their rights legally, they do it through equal protection. Racial minorities, Brown versus Board of Education, equal protection. Sex discrimination, women, ethnic minorities, it's always done through equal protection. For some reason, atheist humanists, when we want to assert our rights, we don't do it through equal protection. We look at the Establishment Clause instead. And I think because it's worked for a while, it's been an effective tool, but in recent years it hasn't been so effective, and I think we really need to go back to the drawing board and consider this very powerful weapon that's been overlooked for too long.
Well, I think that's definitely a compelling argument, and I look forward to seeing some of the things that come out of this. Now, coming up in June, the AHA has a convention in New Orleans, and it looks like Gloria Steinem is slated to be honored as Humanist of the Year. Can you discuss a little bit, why now? Gloria Steinem is a hallmark of 1970s feminism, and what's sort of relevant today about Gloria Steinem and feminism, and what does she have to do with humanism?
Oh, my goodness. Well, women's rights and women's equality is a very essential aspect of humanism. I think, the secular movement, rightly so, really asserts the issue of godlessness and secularism and theological questions. And I think that's great. And the humanist movement also, as part of the secular movement, does that as well. But as a humanist, the American Humanist Association, we're more than just the issue of godlessness and atheist rights. We're also for affirmative progressive values. And women's rights are an essential yardstick of progress and progressive values. So feminism has been part of humanism for as long as there's been humanism, the idea of women's rights. Some people will debate over whether the term feminism is still a word that should be used. Most humanists feel perfectly comfortable with it, but some people feel that the word feminism itself is a bit outdated. But whether you want to talk about that particular word or not, I'd rather not. I'd rather just focus on whether women's rights is a legitimate issue for humanists, and it's not even a question. question. I think you can tell an awful lot about a society by how women are treated within that society. And the progressive secular society that most secularists are trying to build is a society that really recognizes the importance of women's rights. And Gloria Steinem is the icon of women's rights for the past generation. She's done more to break down barriers than just about anyone I can think of. She's a remarkable woman. I think a lot of people, young people in the secular movement and even outside the secular movement, could learn an awful lot about how to change the world by going back and looking at Gloria Steinem's writings and activism over the years.
Absolutely.
I think you've put your finger on it. I mean, the sort of the position of feminism and the idea of feminism in the atheist and free thought movements is still a debate going on, but one of the and I think you put your finger right on it, that the idea that women's rights are something that we need to hew close to when which are important to the movement, that's really not up for debate. And it's always been, I wouldn't say immutable, but it's always been a major pillar of sort of what we've been doing here in the atheism visibility movement. Now, you've got a book coming up called Nonbeliever Nation. Can you give us some, tell us about it a bit?
Sure, yeah. It's coming out in July with Palgrave Macmillan, and I'm very excited about it. It is, I would say, the first book with a major publisher that really is specifically about the secular movement, the modern secular movement. It talks about the religious right and the problem of the religious right, how it grew from really an impotent group of obscure ministers to a very, very powerful movement over the last 30 years or so. I'm sure you're familiar with the basic history of how the religious right really came into its own in the 1980 presidential election when religious conservatives helped elect Ronald Reagan. Before 1980, religious conservatives as a political force were non-existent. They just weren't even part of the analysis. The Republican Party had lots of pro-choice, high-profile people, Barry Goldwater, Nelson Rockefeller. But since 1980, the religious right has grown into an extremely powerful force, as we all know. And it really has not had any serious opposition. Even religious liberals have not been able to stand up and say, you know, to in control. I would say with just about every election cycle, the religious right has gotten stronger and stronger and bolder with what they're trying to do. Now they're coming after our birth control, as we all know. So this book is about how the modern secular movement, and by that I mean the secular movement of the last 5 to 10 years, has really become the key opposition to the religious right, the serious force that might actually be able to turn the tide on the religious right. And it's because the modern secular movement is much different than the opposition the religious right had from 1980 until the beginning of George W. Bush's term.
So, David, I actually read all of the articles that you write for Psychology Today. Keep them coming, please. I love them. It's a great way for us to be able to keep a finger on the pulse of what's going on in the country. I identified, actually, with your recent article, why more non-believers are openly identifying. Is this article kind of a ramp-up to your book? I particularly liked what you said. What non-believers are increasingly discovering is that the reluctance to openly identify as secular only plays into the hand of the religious right.
That's right. The article certainly touches upon some of the things I talk about in the book. The book is goes on and on various issues, but that is definitely part of it, the idea of identity politics. We should realize that for the first 20 to 25 years of the religious right, the main opposition to the religious right would be liberals saying, well, we're religious too. You know, think of Bill Clinton type, right? That was the opposition. And again, that just feeds right into how does that challenge the authority of the religious right if liberals say, well, we can be religious too? I mean, if liberals are religious too, that's great, fine, but let's not exalt religion as if that's something that really should build respect and give somebody authority politically. I think, you know, if you happen to be religious, that's great, but what do you stand for and what are your policies? And the religious right has just gone on unchallenged on the question of religion. In fact, as liberals play that religion card, they only feed the religious right, because who is more authoritative on religious issues than the ones who are the biggest loudmouths on the issue, right? I really think by building respect for the secular demographic, which has been invisible, I think we really get a lot of mileage as far as creating a true opposition to the religious right. We have a visible segment of society that is standing up and saying, your religion is meaningless as far as your authority goes. Back up your policy positions with something other than scripture. And that really forces the religious right into a corner, I think.
Oh, yeah. All right, David Niosi is an attorney, activist, and president of the American Humanist Association. He's also vice president of the Secular Coalition for America. He's got a book coming out called Nonbeliever Nation. When do you expect that on the shelves?
Middle of July. July 17th is the release date.
All right, July 17th. Thank you very much, David.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry, Charlie. This is Ask an Atheist. 253-584-1480. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to do some news.
Did you know that not a single psychic or paranormal event has ever been reproduced?
Have you ever wondered about the effectiveness of faith healing, Reiki, or sports bracelets?
Was 9/11 an inside job, or is that all just another unproven conspiracy theory?
Come check out the Seattle Skeptics, a group focused on lively debates and a critical examination of pseudoscience, alternative medicine, and anything else that hasn't held up to the light of the scientific method.
Seattle Skeptics was created for those who require a higher bar of evidence than gut feelings or blind belief.
We're not contrarians or cynics, we just want to see the evidence.
And so should you.
Check us out at seattleskeptics.com.
That's seattleskeptics.com.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communications succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com. Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
Looking to sell or buy a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, and surrounding areas? Plant your roots and invest in this entrepreneur-friendly area with world-class education and healthcare. Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 and let him work with you to achieve your goals, save your time, and protect your investment. Contact Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at dndrealty.ca. It's time you hired a professional.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And we've got a quick email. And this comes to us from Peggy from Kent, surprisingly enough. This should sound familiar to you guys. And this is about her challenge. In the past few weeks, it has been great hearing all the listeners who have made contributions to the show and to see new advertisers becoming involved. Your program is important to me because it gives a voice to counter the constant barrage of right-wing religious zealots who are attempting to invade every aspect of our lives. I'd like to keep the ball rolling by donating again. It would be so great if we, your listeners, could fund the next year of your show and let you spend your time on program content. Keep up the great work. I'm grateful to the producers and the staff who bring us the show each week. And our new contributors this week are...
Well, Peggy from Kent, thank you so much again. Marshall from Panama City, Florida. Richard from Blackburn in the UK.
All right. So we've got a lot of news this week, and a lot of it is frighteningly local.
Yeah.
And this one is Seattle Church's refused petition to reverse gay marriage law. And the background on this, I don't know if you've heard about what's going on here in Washington State, but Governor Gregoire called for marriage equality to become a reality in Washington State. The legislature agreed, but even before Gregoire signed the bill into law, religious operatives were busy at work developing petitions to, revoke these rights. The result is the new Referendum 74, which would put the issue to a public vote. For which the Archbishop of Seattle, Peter Sarton, is urging all parishes to conduct petition drives during services. This is the Archbishop who testified in Olympia that marriage between a man and a woman is the basic unit of society, a personal relationship with public significance. This is the man who wants to legislate the behavior of people outside his flock. This is also the guy who sent a letter claiming people who experience same-sex attraction have the same dignity as heterosexuals, but marriage can only be between a man and a woman. So, fast forward to earlier this week, where the Reverend Michael Ryan of Seattle St. James Cathedral noted on the church website that after discussing the matter with the members of the cathedral's pastoral ministry team, I have decided that we will not participate in the collecting of signatures in our parish, he wrote. Doing so would, I believe, prove hurtful and seriously divisive in our community. In saying this, I do realize that there are some who will be disappointed with this decision. Seattle St. Mary's Church will also abstain from signature drives.
And so will St. Joseph's Parish. So we have three. I think that, there may be some who will be disappointed with the decision not to run these petition drives. I am not amongst those disappointed. I think that, anyone who is signing the petition to get this Referendum 74 on the ballot, actually putting, civil rights to a public vote, I have no intention of participating in such antics.
Well, the whole point of rights is that they're rights. It is the whole concept under which the Bill of Rights were written in the Constitution was that these are things that we have as humans, which the Constitution is specifically claiming.
There's something about them being inalienable, if I'm not mistaken.
Not in the Constitution, but that is a foundational document.
What's interesting is that our guest, David Niosi, actually wrote a short story a few months back that's called If You Love Me, You'll Divorce Me. He wrote it for Psychology Today. I wish I had the opportunity to talk to him about it, but we just ran out of time. But he wrote the short story about a couple who the woman said to her husband, if you love me, you'll divorce me. Actually walked him to an attorney. They signed the papers. The whole principle of it, though, was that as atheists, they stood by the sanctity of love, not the sanctity of marriage. Because obviously, the word marriage has been used and abused in today's society. And it's in some societies, it's almost a joke, especially in the celebrity venues. You've got everybody divorcing people left and right. I don't understand why people just aren't comfortable with people having the rights to love one another the way that they want to and leave it alone.
Well, there are certain civil things that you get when you get married.
Yes.
Unfortunately, as we have recently, we've recently tested and figured out ourselves. And this is something, it's something that we talk about a lot, Becky and I, because we're planning on getting married soon. And, another part of that article, if I remember right, was people shouldn't get married because, out of protest, because marriage is a legal thing that has been prevented, that certain people are prevented
Correct.
From getting married.
Yes.
Every time I've talked about that with folks who are fighting that particular fight, first and foremost, say that's not a great idea, because the idea is that we want more people to get married. We want all of these people to get married. We don't want less marriages. We want more. We want better family units. We want better cooperation between people.
Absolutely. And I guess what I really was trying to say was that it disappoints me that the law and the government are standing in the way of us being able to do that.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
I think that, the thing that it comes down to is that for some people, having a legal or ceremonial marriage sanctifies their love. For some people, it doesn't. And either way is just fine. Mm-hmm. But if we have two people that love each other, we should not be able to vote on whether to deny them the same rights as everyone
else.
There
are two things that we talk about a lot. on the show. One is, this is another example of Catholics being better than the Catholic Church, is that these are people who are standing up and saying, we will not impinge upon the rights of other people.
Right.
We're not going to use church time to take rights away from people. That's great. I love that.
Yeah.
Continue that. The other thing is the idea that religion is a, or that marriage is a subject for religion. Last I checked, human pair bonding actually is older than Christianity,
mm-hmm.
right? I just checking.
Mm-hmm. I think you're pretty accurate there.
So the whole point there is once, this is something that Debattant said in the interview with us, and Mike said it, I've said it a million times, is that religion, in order to get that social control, will take over these important parts of human life and ritualize them in order to make religion connected to these important parts of your life. And so if you know, one of the ways to cut that connection is to actually not go through with the ritual.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, three cheers for the folks in Seattle who don't want
to,
who don't want to use their church time for this kind of shenanigans, and well, no three cheers for Peter Sartin, Bishop.
Now, it goes on. We have another story about the Catholic Church, and this is the Vatican orders the crackdown on American nuns, which sounds,
those evil rebellious nuns.
Yeah, it sounds a lot cooler than it really is. This comes to us from the USA Today. The Vatican has launched a crackdown on the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, LCWR, an umbrella group that represents most of America's 55,000 Catholic nuns, saying that the group was not speaking out strongly enough against gay marriage, abortion, and women's ordination, and for sponsoring conferences that featured a prevalence of certain radical feminist themes incompatible with the Christian Catholic faith, rather. The directive, which follows a two-year investigation by Rome, also comes as the Vatican appeared ready to welcome a controversial right-wing splinter group of Catholic traditionalists back into the fold, possibly by giving the group a special status so that they can continue to espouse their old-line rights and beliefs. The Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, now led by American Cardinal William Lavada, appointed Seattle Archbishop Peter Sartin, sound familiar, to lead the process for overhauling LCWR's governance and reviewing its plans and programs and its leadership with certain groups that the Vatican finds suspect. So, the nuns aren't doing too well. Apparently, they're not quite backwards enough, what with the leadership of women and stuff like that.
They're not slamming the gays. They're they're not outwardly saying, you know, abortion is terrible.
So let's put Peter Sartin. This guy's turning out to be a real prize.
Yeah, prize isn't around. Really the word that I might use. I might suspect that maybe even Catholics might not use that same word, but I cannot speak for you Catholics.
Apparently not. I mean, there seems to be a lot of disagreement.
I would love to hear from a Catholic who is either in accordance with Peter Sartin or more in line with the three Seattle parishes that refuse this kind of thing.
I guess this is kind of trivia, but Mike would be mad at me if I didn't bring this up. But this Catholic traditionalist that they're trying to bring back into the fold, this is the same group. This is the group of people who decided Vatican II was a bad idea. You know, the thing that says maybe we won't be so backwards and stupid about stuff, and includes the group of people that Mel Gibson is involved with, Mel Gibson's father, and stuff like that. So anybody who tells you that the Catholic Church is forward looking and is trying to meet the 21st century head on, that may have been true with the last guy, but with Pope Palpatine or whatever, they're bringing the pre-Vatican II guys back.
Yeah,
this is definitely a step in the wrong direction, as I'm concerned.
Not least of which one of them happens to be a Holocaust denier.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, jeez.
Great. So, we have this guy. You know, if he were just sticking to his own sort of flock, if you will, we could let that play its course, within the Catholic Church, but he's also really trying to, step on people's rights outside of what he's in charge of. He's trying to legislate he's trying to change people's lives who are not Catholic.
And if you know something about this guy or what's going on with the Catholic Church up here in Seattle, or just have some comments on it, you can give us a call, 253-584-1480. This is Ask an Atheist, and Becky, you've got a really kind of weird story.
I do. You know,
not what? Involving Peter Sartin.
No, not involving Seattle, not involving Catholics. This one, I could not help but laugh, but also painfully laugh. This comes to us from the Bay Area Citizen. It's entitled "Suspect in Christian Pamphlet Hit and Run Turns Self In." A League City woman accused of striking a high school student with her car in Houston after driving off after throwing him a Christian pamphlet has turned herself in. Hillen. Ada Hillen was charged with failure to stop and render aid on November 30th. According to the probable cause document, on October 14th, around 5:15 p.m., a high school student was crossing Broadway Street near his school and was about to step on the curb when he was struck in the right side by a car. The 15-year-old student stated that the driver of the car stopped briefly and asked if he was okay. Good so far, right?
Yeah.
When he replied, no, the woman tossed a Christian booklet out of the window and drove away.
So this is the drive-through version of be healed.
No idea. Yes, but you're not supposed to heal someone that you yourself have caused injury to. So another student wrote down the car's license plate number on his arm and called the police. You know, that's how sort of they tracked down this woman. She turned herself in. This young boy's medical bills caused by the accident reportedly amount to around $730. That's not an insignificant amount of money.
No.
And apparently she turned herself in, she talked to the police, and she admitted to driving but denied hitting anyone. I have no idea why a child's medical bills could come to $730, have another student witness it, and have him not be hit.
Well, okay, so let's assume that this went down as it said.
Okay.
It's something we talk about a lot, but we keep kind of is religion the reason this person sucks? I guess.
So did this woman's Christianity cause her to flee the scene of an accident and
no.
failure to and stop to render
yes.
aid?
Yeah.
Did her Christianity cause her
I'm,
to
I'm
do
asking
that?
You this question.
I don't think so. I think, though, that she is hiding behind the pamphlet and the fact that she is a Christian to sort of indemnify herself against the fact that she hit a 15-year-old kid with her car.
How about you, Eileen?
So I'm not sure why she wouldn't have gotten out of... took the time to actually ask him the question, are you okay?
Yeah.
But didn't follow through and thought that throwing him a pamphlet, oh, I'm a Christian and I'm going to share this with you. I also read that the kid's friend chased her down the street as she screeched away in her car and she just kind of waved at them. That's obviously...
God be with you!
Yeah, that's obviously not helping.
Okay, so on the other side is if I was driving along and I saw some kid get hurt and I go, hey, you okay? No! Nah, you're being a sarcastic dork. I'm going to skip... Yeah. Here's a pamphlet. I'm leaving now.
So you ungrateful child leapt in front of my car and are now sassing me here. You could learn something from my Christian booklet?
Well, I I'm suggesting things aren't nearly as bad as it sounds. It's not like she ran a kiddo. It doesn't look like she just ran him right over, because $730, I imagine if something were important were, say, crushed, it would cost a little bit more than $730 in today's dollars to fix that.
No, it did say that he suffered bruised ribs after falling and being struck by the car, so.
So maybe she didn't know or something. I'll just throw that out there. But if he's being sarcastic and going, no, is it still really a good idea to just throw a pamphlet at him and move on?
The thing is that she identified that she did something wrong to ask him, are you okay, right?
Yeah, I suppose so.
So by doing so, she's essentially admitting that she did hit him.
I'm trying to come up with a way where this lady isn't a total jerk, and I'm just not coming up with
it. I can't find it. Sorry.
I don't know. Maybe
can't help her.
maybe somebody else has an idea, and I look forward to hearing it. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to go to a break, and we come back some more news and some emails.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
Billy! Billy! I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
And how do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Sigmund Freud said, "The voice of the intellect is a soft one, but it does not rest until it has gained a hearing." Whether you're at a point in life where you are questioning your beliefs, or if you've always been an atheist or agnostic, the Auburn Freethought Society is a place where your own voice of intellect will be heard. You'll interact with like-minded people, engage in intellectual conversation, and share your experiences with others in the Auburn, Washington area. At Auburn Freethought Society, we encourage critical thought and reason. For details, find us on Facebook and on Meetup.com. Auburn Freethought Society. Have real discussion and share real ideas. Really.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And we've got some emails. And our first email comes to us from Jay from Florida. My wife and I have our 2.5-year-old enrolled at a daycare affiliated with a church. This daycare has an actual curriculum, sometimes involving teaching of the Gospels. We can't afford much, and this center seems to have a lot of educational quality for much less than the equivalent secular daycare. We have rationalized this by assuming that our son is currently too young to really be indoctrinated, especially if his parents are not believers. I believe the daycare uses the Gospels as teaching tools mainly for lessons like sharing or the Golden Rule. We plan on pulling him out of the program when he's around 4 or so. Do you guys believe a Christian-based early education can damage a child psychologically?
I think it depends on what they're teaching. If they're just sticking to the Golden Rule, take care of one another, all that good stuff, then great.
Yeah.
But I know a woman who is a New Age Christian. Her husband, unfortunately, is a very conservative Christian, and they have 2 kids, and to unteach mom's new wave Christian-y ways, took the 4-year-old aside and told the 4-year-old a story of how God is a loving God, but he's also a God that should be feared, and you as a 4-year-old need to prove that you can get into heaven, otherwise God is going to damn you to hell, and you will burn and suffer and experience tons of pain. This
so
is a 4-year-old.
This happened at a daycare?
No, this is a woman that I know and her husband.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So it depends upon what they're teaching these kids.
So
basically.
As an educator, what do you think, Becky?
Well, as an educator, the first thing that comes to mind is that, I mean, there's a lot of really excellent federally funded preschool programs and kindergarten programs. In fact, in Washington State, I know that, Jay, you're emailing from Florida, Washington State, that's found that we get the best bang for the buck.
If I may stop you, this is kind of a dodge. He lives in Florida, and a lot of these programs, I'm speaking from experience here, a lot of these programs aren't available in less urban areas.
In fact, though, Head Start does focus specifically on both rural and urban. If you're living in sort of a suburban area, it might be the case that, you know, that the best curriculum, the best educational, opportunities happen to be with a religious institution. The other thing that I would really be very careful about is that religious institutions and religious childcare facilities are not subject to the same regulation that other daycares and childcare centers are, whether they're federally funded or just secular.
But to bring it back to the central question, do you think this is psychologically damaging?
Do I think it's psychologically damaging? I think that, there's a lot of studies that have been shown that children are most influenced by their family life, by their parents, until about sort of late elementary school. So I think that in the sort of initial sense, as long as you provide a really good sort of supportive environment at home, and you're really making sure that the Gospels that are being used as teaching tools are not teaching the same sort of things that, like, oh, well, you're fine, honey, but your parents are going to hell. I think that can be very psychologically damaging and suspect. So I would do a lot of investigation.
And I would actually even recommend to you, Jay, to try to sit in the classes. If they allow parents into the classes during the daytime or, you know, while they're in session, go and observe and see what they're teaching. And if it's obviously something that you think is going to actually harm your child in the future, pull them out now.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, sometimes daycares and preschools will not want parents sitting in with their own child. But if you can observe a sort of a parallel class, then that would be a good avenue to pursue as well.
Yeah. And this is something that the humanist and atheist community has been slowly working on, is sort of our own daycare infrastructure. I know that's an idea that's been important to you now and again, Becky. It's something that you've been wanting to work on.
Yes.
And, you know, he says he has been looking at other opportunities for daycare, but this was a lot more economical. And, and you know, with the economy being what it is, you take what you can get. And while these federal programs that you like to talk about are out there, they're not everywhere and they're not as widespread as we'd like them to be. So sometimes
that is true.
This is what he's got. And rather than saying, you know, oh, check out these other things, we can actually look at the central question here. Do I think that this is psychologically damaging? Well, I do. But I also think Yo Gabba Gabba is psychologically damaging. So, I mean, you take what you can get. And as long as you supplement the material that you're getting from the daycare with your own material to show them that this is, like, basically put the foundations down for mythology and to say that this is a mythology and this is not a mythology that your family believes in, so that while they might try and convince you of this, this is not what we believe, and we don't believe this is true, and here's why, I think you can sort of ameliorate the effect somewhat.
I agree. And then start it early at that age versus waiting until they're able to be pulled out of the school or transfer, and then encourage that type of that thought at home. Do it now when they're young, when they're most impressionable.
Yeah, but personally, I would prefer it if nobody were taught religion before, say, 18. You know, we left religion out of childhood. I think if we didn't have that indoctrinational part of it, if we didn't indoctrinate our children into religion, religion wouldn't live, because it wouldn't exist, because it doesn't stand up to the test of time. It doesn't stand up to the test of evidence. And if you teach people to look at the evidence and perceive the world, you know, sort of through a scientific lens, none of this makes any sense.
Oh, I wish.
All right. You know how I pronounce things. How do I pronounce this?
I think this letter comes to us from Ian from Edinburgh, Scotland.
Yeah. Ian, okay.
I think so, too.
Hi, guys. I thought this news might interest you. Evidently, the British government has changed the laws over here to prevent the teaching of creationism in state schools.
Woohoo!
Yay!
According to the British Humanist Association, it precludes the teaching as an evidence-based viewer theory of any viewer theory that is contrary to established scientific and or historical evidence and explanations. This highly significant change has been made in order to ban creationism from being taught in free schools and prevent creationist groups from opening schools. This change allows the BHA coordinating the Teach Evolution, Not Creationism campaign, which called for this precise change. Well, congratulations.
That's fantastic.
And yeah. Especially in light of last week, the story we talked about where the Tennessee legislature has approved teaching alternate theories, ideas, etc., and exploring with a serious critical eye, you know, the underpinnings of how the world got to be, how animals got to be the way they are, how the world is. I mean, basically opening the door to, like, creationism being taught in public schools.
Right.
I think that this is a light, a bright spot in terms of, you know, British humanism, and I just wish that we could have the same kind of laws state to state, you know, here in the U.S.
Well, it in the U.S., is it still teach the controversy? I can never keep up on creationist fads. What is the new? Are we still teaching the controversy here, or is it something else now?
I think that it's be able to examine alternate views with a critical eye. It's under actually the guise of, quote, critical thinking, where it says, we'll think critically about whether evolution is supported or not. Well, yes, when I look at it critically and I think it's highly supported. Many different, you know, points of triangulation come together to support this as a solid scientific theory.
Sure. Because I mean, the controversy thing is a bit weird. Is there a controversy over, and this is something we've been talking about recently, is there a controversy over evolution? Well, yes. There's a lot of people out there who don't believe in evolution who would prefer to believe the mythology of their religion. Is there a scientific controversy for religion? Is there anybody out there who's saying scientifically, based on this evidence, this peer-reviewed evidence, that evolution isn't true? No.
I haven't heard it.
No, there is none.
No.
It's one of the most well-established theories in science right now, partially because of this other controversy. It's not like, you know, gravity is pretty self-evident to people. Things fall to the ground. For some reason, evolution isn't so self-evident. So we've needed, so the proof has had to be there. So in a way, this non-scientific controversy has made it not a scientific controversy at all. It is so well-established.
So I have a biology teacher who actually believed in teaching the controversy in high school, and he presented biology and evolution by saying that, yes, the Big Bang happened, and it took a long time. However, evolution occurred and out-evolved Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden.
That's weird.
And fortunately, because he was teaching the controversy and was trying somehow to teach critical thinking, most of us didn't buy it.
That's excellent. I guess if he's following the established guidelines for how to evaluate and criticize an assertion, then most of you in your biology class could say, oh, this really doesn't hold water.
Well, would he provide evidence? And that gets a little scary, teaching your own variant of science in the science classroom.
Yeah.
It's like this is why I think Battlestar Galactica is true in the classroom. nobody would fall for that. Nobody would like that. I would get in trouble, and rightly so.
Yes, mitochondrial Eve was an alien.
Hey, spoilers.
Oh, sorry.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. So we've got another email. Would you care to read it?
Sure. This comes to us from Chase from Florida, and it was a great response to last week, an email we read. We heard from a teen in Ireland who was having trouble interacting with his religious mother, and another listener shared his tactic. Chase writes, "My future mother-in-law was a Catholic nun for many years and still holds very close to the church. We butt heads sometimes, and she still doesn't completely trust me. Recently, she sent out a mass email that was a short prayer request for a friend of hers with cancer. I wanted to respond with, actually do something to help, or nothing fails like a prayer, or it's the least you could do for her. No, really, the absolute least. But instead, I decided to lead by example. I went to Charity Watch and found a well-rated charity that deals with cancer research and donated in honor of her friend with cancer. I packed up some info about the place and sent it back. She was floored and wrote me back multiple times to thank me. I think it helped budge her view a little on myself and atheists in general. I don't know how to handle every prayer situation, but this one worked out really well for me. It isn't cheap, but maybe if we can get a few atheists to make a point of donating in response to prayer requests, we can change some minds. Actions speak louder than words, especially when those words are in your head."
So this goes right back to the National Day of Reason thing.
Yes.
Rather than sitting in, I know they sit at one of the, in Tacoma, they get together, I think at Cheney. And do
at the Cheney Stadium, or it might be at the Tacoma Dome this year. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Wow.
And they just sort of, yeah, sit in a pile and pray. Where for the National Day of Reason, which you don't have to be non-religious to participate in, the idea is working in the community, going out and doing something that has an effect on the world around you. If you're hoping to help somebody who has problems with cancer, yeah, help with cancer research. That's why Seattle Atheists is doing it's what it's doing. It's why Friendly Atheist is working with the Leukemia Lymphoma Group. Mm-hmm. And
I think there are actually a few groups within the Seattle area that are hosting Day of Reason blood drive, blood donations.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on here. And that's really, I think, what we need to take away from this is atheism is about doing things, especially humanism as well, is about doing things in the community, is about basically human solutions to human problems, rather than punting it to the next higher rung up and hoping for a literal deus ex machina. We actually have to go through and do these things.
Yes.
We actually have to solve these problems. So when somebody says pray, Do something. Go out there and help. See if you can help that person. See if you can help the community. See if you can help research. Do what you can.
Yeah, and Chase, you hit it on the head when you said lead by example and actions speak louder than words. And taking it one step further, this is actually great for the atheist visibility movement, because if they see a bunch of atheists who are not religious, who do things positively for the community and help other people for the community, they might go, oh, atheists really aren't so bad after all, are they?
Yeah, this really is the way to do it. So we've got one more email, and this comes to us from Will from the interwebs, and it's a short one. What about Buddhism? What are your thoughts on Buddhism? Anybody?
I know that I went to the Lama Temple in Shanghai, in Beijing, and it was beautiful. It was highly religious, at least Tibetan Buddhism. And amazing. Artistically, just ceremonially, ritually, very highly religious. That was my interface with Buddhism.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is you like ritual. That's something you've always sort of appreciated.
I have. Ritual, I like art, I like sort of the rhythm of things.
And many other religions also have beautiful ceremonies, beautiful architecture, beautiful religious-related functions.
Yeah,
but bottom line, it's a religion.
Well, that's the thing, is that especially a lot of people see Buddhism as the great exception, where, where Christianity and Islam have these really dense mythologies. Buddhism doesn't necessarily have these dense mythologies and these spiritualities, so it's kind of like an atheist religion, as I've heard it marketed that way.
It was definitely sort of an eye-opener for me to go see a Tibetan Buddhist temple when I had mostly heard of Americans sort of generally just saying, oh yeah, I'm Buddhist, but that's my philosophy, it's not a religion. I don't believe in any of the supernatural associated with it.
But here,
as well.
Here's the thing, that the Tibetan Buddhism definitely has a supernatural aspect to it. Definitely has these sort of gods and goddesses and the reincarnation thing. And we are, here at Ask an Atheist, we are atheists, we are also skeptics, we are also rationalists. If there's no evidence for these things, we're not inclined to believe them at all. As far as the philosophy of Buddhism, I know Mike likes to say he doesn't like the all life is suffering thing. I tend to agree with it a little bit more, but with large asterisks. So I think we're going to be doing an episode on this soon.
Oh, cool. That's exciting.
I'd love to hear from some atheist Buddhists. I know that within, sometimes when we are boothing, we hear from them saying, yeah, well, I'm not an atheist because I'm a Buddhist.
So anyway, it's something I want to talk about. Because Buddhism, I mean, it's an interesting topic, and people sort of, there's sort of two groups of people in atheism. There's sort of people who want, who like the idea of some, not necessarily worship, but some form of congregation and some sort of joined philosophy, and then another group of people who don't. I mean, there's sort of the secular Jewish thing that you want to talk about, right?
Yes, I think that in the future, I mean, it's really neat to look at sort of how secular Jews can remove the supernatural aspect of things, but still remain a congregation or an extended family. So stuff to look forward to.
All right, this is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam Olvey. With me was Rebecca Friedman, Eileen Caballo, and special guest, David Niosi. Thank you very much. As usual, our music is by Chris Coleman. My production assistants were Mike Gillis, Darren Garvin, and Bridget Lombardo. Our post show is at the office at 5 o'clock in downtown Tacoma. Ask an Atheist is an ADM Media production. You can call us at 206-420-0997. Go to our website at askanatheist.tv or email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. See you next week.
Play radio